Welcome back, everyone. This is Sam.
And this is Corrine, and we are two OncDocs.
We are updating another important GYN oncology topic with uterine or endometrial cancer today, talking about the important risk factors, presentation, diagnosis, staging, and treatment options. And we will also briefly cover rare uterine malignancies.
Definitely. So again, depending on where you guys train, you may not be exposed to or see a ton of gynonc. And so unless you guys have a dedicated gynonc service, you guys do, you know, rotate through. So this was a big thing for Corrine and I to really refresh and go over before our ITs as well as our boards. And so Corrine, talk to us, how does uterine cancer generally present in women?
The typical presentation will be vaginal bleeding in a postmenopausal woman, and you need to consider an endometrial biopsy. And about 90% of women with endometrial cancer have abnormal vaginal bleeding at presentation, but other symptoms can include vaginal discharge, pelvic pain or pressure, as well as change in bowel habits.
And so what are some risk factors for uterine cancer, including some of those familial syndromes that they can test us on?
Obesity is a risk factor, as well as things that affect hormone levels like taking estrogen after menopause, birth control pills, or tamoxifen, PCOS, infertility, older age, family history, history of radiation to the pelvis, and endometrial hyperplasia are also listed risk factors. And there are familial syndromes like you alluded to, like Lynch syndrome, where you can have mutations in MLH1, MSH2, MSH6, or PSM2. And for a woman with Lynch syndrome, a hysterectomy can be offered at the age of 35 if they've completed childbearing.
Absolutely. I think it's so important when we walk into test day to know these genetic syndromes, know all of the cancers associated with them, and then also the prophylactic surgical recommendations. And so how is uterine cancer diagnosed as well as staged?
An endometrial biopsy is the gold standard, and stage one endometrial cancer is confined to the corpus. Stage two extends to the cervix, but does not extend beyond the uterus. Stage three, you have regional spread, like in many other cancers, to the lymph nodes, or here also to the vagina or adnexa. And then stage 4A invades into the bladder or rectal mucosa. And then stage 4B is distant metastatic disease.
Definitely. And so what are our types of endometrial cancers?
80% of endometrial cancers are endometrioid carcinoma. There are grade 1 and 2 endometrioid cancers, which are type 1 endometrial cancers. And then type 2 cancers include all endometrial cancers that aren't type 1, such as papillary serous carcinoma, clear cell carcinoma, undifferentiated carcinoma, and grade 3 endometrioid carcinoma. And uterine serous cancers are aggressive, like ovarian cancer, and so are treated as such.
And so what is our mainstay treatment for uterine carcinoma?
So surgery is the mainstay for localized disease. It's important to know risk categories. So if they are confined to the uterus, the surgery will be bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy with hysterectomy. And if the patient is not suitable for surgery, consider radiation or hormone therapy, like progesterone-based therapy. So as far as our risk categories, low risk are our stage 1A and grade 1 and 2 endometrioid. And for those patients, you can consider alternatives to surgery with hormone therapy, like I mentioned, with oral progestins, so midgestrel, medroxyprogesterone, or levonorgestrel IUDs are all options for those that desire to maintain fertility. And then intermediate risk are other stage 1 and stage 2, and then high risk are those stage 3, so those lymph nodes that are positive or invasion into the vagina or adnexa, and then stage 4A, and as well as non-endometrioid histologies.
Definitely. And so who does not need adjuvant treatment?
So the low risk category, so those grade 1 and 2 endometrioids, stage 1A cancers.
Great. And then who needs adjuvant radiation?
So the stage 1As that are grade 3 or stage 1B, so again, limited to the endometrium or extending to less than half of the myometrium, you consider adjuvant brachytherapy, but you don't need full pelvic radiation. If they're stage 2, extending to the cervix but not beyond the uterus, you do need extended beam radiation therapy or EBRT. And a trial has previously shown that chemo radiation or chemo followed by radiation was not superior to radiation alone.
And who needs adjuvant chemo?
So all the stage 3s and 4s need systemic therapy. So stage 3, as a reminder, again, regional spread to the lymph nodes or vagina or adnexa. Stage 4A, invading into the bladder or rectal mucosa, or distant metastatic disease for 4B. And then the clear cell or serous histologies need adjuvant chemo. And then for some stage threes, you can consider chemoradiation followed by chemo. And here the preferred chemo regimen is cisplatin radiation followed by carboplatin.
Right. And then what about molecular testing in endometrial cancer?
So this is new. We're doing molecular and genomic profiling, if available, can determine whether you can consider omitting adjuvant therapy. So you can check for POLE, P-O-L-E, MMR, MSI testing, and TP53. And tumors testing positive for the POLE mutation can consider de-escalation of adjuvant therapy. And I know there was an ASCO-SAP question on this.
Great. And then what are the preferred systemic treatment regimens?
So the chemotherapy here, you know, the rule of thumb for our chemos and GYN onc are often carboplatin. So here it's a doublet with carboplatin for 6 to 9 cycles. The new change since we last did this episode is that you're going to add immunotherapy, either pembrolizumab based on the KEYNOTE-868 or dostarlimab based on the RUBY trial. And then for deficient MMR, you can also consider durvalumab based on the DUO-E trial. And so a good rule of thumb, anytime you see deficient MMR in a vignette, basically across tumor types, be thinking about immunotherapy. And then if they're HER2 positive and serous histology, add trastuzumab.
So tell us about treatment options for second line metastatic disease.
So the definition for platinum sensitive disease is whether you've had platinum more than 6 months ago. If that's the case, you want to consider re-challenging with platinum-based chemotherapy. Immunotherapy used to be in the second line setting, but now it's moved up to the front line setting. But prior options were pembrolizumab with lenvatinib. And hopefully they won't test on that now that immunotherapy has moved in the front line setting. And then you want to be thinking about your molecular testing. So for HER2 therapy, you can consider trastuzumab deruxtecan for HC2 plus or 3 plus, you know, pan-tumor approval. And then the same goes for NTRK. And so, Sam, I'm going to pass it on to you now that we're going to dive into some rare uterine sarcoma, since this is your area of expertise. What are the treatments for those different types of cancers?
Absolutely. So I think one important thing is I truly don't believe these are testable for you guys, because as you know, and we'll talk about in further episodes, sarcomas are exceedingly rare, even in the uterus. And there are many different kinds, and it's not a one size fits all. One histologic type that we do think we could talk about is carcinosarcoma. And so carcinosarcoma used to be called mixed mullerian tumor. And so this, we do utilize that RUBY trial like you talked about earlier. So that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2023. So we talk about carboplatin dostarlimab. These patients were included in that trial. So that is truly one of our standard. I think outside of standard things, you do want to be checking for HER2 status in this population as well, because you can target with HER2. And then you think about other chemotherapies. We do think about high dose ifosfamide like we do in most sarcomas. And then also, again, those platinum taxols, you can re-challenge if someone is still platinum sensitive. Clinical trials is always the right answer for carcinosarcomas. And really, resection is one of our primary treatments, like in all sarcomas. We talk about surgery, even if there is limited metastatic disease. Then we talk about other uterine sarcomas, which we cannot miss, leiomyosarcoma. And so I think one most important thing is that these patients can and should be seen by a sarcoma expert and a sarcoma team. But in tradition, again, we think about surgery. So with all sarcomas, including from the uterus, surgery, followed by some adjuvant chemotherapy. What that adjuvant chemotherapy is, again, not testable because it depends who treats them. A lot of our gyn-onc colleagues do utilize GEM docetaxel in the adjuvant setting. And then some medical oncologists utilize more anthracycline-based adjuvant chemotherapies like doxorubicin by itself, doxorubicin with ifosfamide, doxorubicin with dacarbazine. In the metastatic setting, we love our anthracycline-based chemos in sarcoma. So again, when it's metastatic, doxorubicin by itself is a great answer, as well as doxorubicin plus ifosfamide or doxorubicin plus dacarbazine. But our latest and greatest breakthrough for leiomyosarcomas, including from uterine origin, is the LMS-04 trial, which was published in the New England Journal of Medicine within the past year. And this was the combination of doxorubicin plus trabectedin. This is the first time we've truly had a prospective large phase 3 trial, which showed significant improvement in median overall survival. So commit doxorubicin plus trabectedin to memory. There are other chemotherapies that we utilize for metastatic uterine leiomyosarcoma. Again, trabectedin by itself, gemcitabine-based regimens with docetaxel. We also have non-chemo options like pazopanib, so TKIs, as well as cabozantinib. And then there is some consideration of adding immunotherapy to TKI based on some early phase 2 data. Not testable at all because traditionally immunotherapy does not work in leiomyosarcomas, especially by itself. And unfortunately, we do have one negative trial that was presented at ASCO 2025, which was saying that we should not recommend the use of Temodar plus olaparib in uterine leiomyosarcomas, but there is still listed in the NCCN guidelines that it can be considered if there is BRCA mutations, but not just a one-size-fits-all. For endometrial stromal sarcomas, we really break this down to grade. And so if this is a low-grade endometrial stromal sarcoma with positive estrogen progesterone receptors, we talk about anti-estrogen hormone-targeted therapies, things like aromatase inhibitors. But if there's a high-grade endometrial stromal sarcoma, we treat it as though it's a soft tissue sarcoma, so back to our anthracycline-based chemotherapies or gemcitabine-based chemotherapies. And lastly, there's an exceedingly ultra-rare tumor called PEComa, with a TSC1 or TSC2 mutation. And so I really think that we can talk about this in our sarcoma episodes, but they can arise more commonly from the uterus. And we do have an FDA approval for a drug called nab-sirolimus in this setting. And so just to kind of finish this off with a little bit of sarcoma flavor, but Kareen, can you tell us our takeaways for just generalized uterine carcinoma?
Yes, and thank you, Sam, for covering a whirlwind of updates in uterine sarcomas. So for traditional endometrial or uterine cancer, surgery is the mainstay, and it's important to know the risk categories. If the disease is confined to the uterus, think about bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy with hysterectomy. For those stage 1A and 1B, consider adjuvant brachytherapy, not full pelvic RT. For stage 2, you do want EBRT, extended beam radiation therapy. For those stage 3, 4s, you need systemic therapy, so carboplatin. And now we have the approval of immunotherapy, both dostarlimab or pembrolizumab for all patients. And then additionally for deficient MMR, we have durvalumab as well, combined with the platinum-based chemotherapy.
Great. And as always, thank you guys so much for listening. Good luck with studying for your boards. Please feel free to reach out to us with corrections or comments at our Instagram or our Twitter, @OncDocs, and have a great week.